It's the beginning of the season of Lent. Even if you don't follow the calendar of the church that closely, just the sudden differences in Sunday morning might have given you a hint that something is up. We chanted a long, long series of prayers on our way up the aisle today, the Great Litany. In the language of the church, whenever something gets called great, it doesn't necessarily mean it's the best thing ever. It only means that it is the longest form of whatever it is. There are a lot of litanies, but there is only one great litany. There are a lot of vigils, but there is only one great vigil of Easter. Things are different today. So welcome to your Lent this year. I hope you are off to a great start. The theme of the morning is the human reality of temptation. Lent is meant to bring us up short against the gap that separates our best selves from our usual selves, and to get us thinking about the reality that closing that gap for good is something we cannot do on our own. It is only something we can do with God's help, because if life teaches us anything, it is that our temptations are stronger than our capacity for self-will. The way this usually goes is that we read the fourth chapter of the Gospel of Matthew, as we just did, and we hear the story of Jesus resisting the temptation of the devil, and from that, we are meant to learn a few lessons. First, the devil is behind every temptation. Second, Jesus is better than we are because he overmasters every temptation. And third, when you overcome temptation, angels come and take care of you. That is the first grasp I had on this story. And maybe it is the way you learned it too. And it's probably okay as far as it goes. But there may be more here. So let's consider those temptations set before Jesus. It seems like they involve matters of the body, of the spirit, and of power. Jesus is hungry. The text says he is famished, and he's offered food. Jesus is despairing, and he's offered easy assurance. Jesus is powerless, and he is offered all the power in the world. That's one reading. But if you look more carefully at those temptations, you see they are all really about the same thing. Because in every case, the basic temptation set before Jesus is to prove who he is on the devil's terms. The giveaway is in the way those first two temptations are set up. It is not, if you're hungry, then make these stones bread. Or if you're lonely, then do something that will get God's attention. Now, the language is very specific. If you are the Son of God, then do this. It is a small distinction that makes for a big difference. Here is the difference. Jesus is being asked to prove himself for all the wrong reasons. He's being asked to lend his virtue to an unworthy end. It is not that bread is bad, or that the assurance of God's presence is bad, and it is surely not that God simply taking over all human affairs would be bad. God knows we do a poor enough job sorting out things for ourselves. No, it's that doing all this for the purpose of dancing to the devil's tune would in effect be handing virtue over to the devil's purposes. And when you see it that way, it is a pretty easy decision to make. So the first reading of this story that we were taught wasn't wrong, but it wasn't complete. The temptations set before Jesus really are not close calls, at least not for him, exactly because it is perfectly obvious that it is the devil behind them. That is easy stuff. When someone or something or some job or some profession or some boss asks you to sell out your values or your principles for some other purpose, even some very seemingly worthy purpose, it really is not a hard call, or at least it should not be. The point of the story isn't supposed to be that Jesus is somehow so much stronger in the face of temptation than we are. That may be true. But when the devil himself is staring you in the face, asking you to do something, it is pretty easy to know that you probably should not yield. Now, that said, there is a problem here. You might call it the hard stuff. It is not that certain moral choices are easy and others are hard, because some choices are obviously wrong and others are harder to parse. You all already know that, and it pretty much goes without saying. No, the real difference between the story we have about Jesus this morning and our own circumstance here today is that the devil does not come and confront us directly anymore. Because in our culture, we have lost any real connection with any idea of a willful, calculating evil. I am following here the thinking of Anthony Del Banco and his now nearly 20-year-old book, The Death of Satan, How Americans Have Lost the Sense of Evil. Professor Del Banco was inspired to write his book when he started grappling with a basic problem that he saw in our national conversation. We are inundated with evidence of the persistent presence of evil in the world, of the human capacity for cruelty and depravity. And yet, we have almost no language with which to make sense out of it. In the course of 20 centuries, we have made an enormous transition from the idea of the devil as the personification of evil, a force contending in spiritual combat with God, the source of all that is good, from that to the image of Adolf Eichmann sitting in the defendant's chair in an Israeli courtroom, dressed in a simple suit and tie, and seeming a simple, mundane bureaucrat on trial for genocide and mass murder. Evil is still with us, but it seems to have lost its force, or at least its vivid danger. It is as though, as Del Banco says, evil tends to recede into the background hum of human life. It is as though the very idea that we have in our day of the self has become, again his words, a collection of functions and duties rather than an accountable moral being. The work of the devil is everywhere. But if we have lost our very sense of the self, then none of us really knows where to look for him. That is the hard stuff, the really hard stuff of our predicament. It is worse than the tempter not showing his face when setting the temptation in front of us. It is that the tempter no longer has a face to show. And yet, we are surrounded by temptation. There is no easy way out of this predicament. But truly, I tell you, it surely is a predicament. And it means we all stand all the more in need of both the means of grace and the hope of glory that we are given by God through the life and work of Jesus. We need it because without the clarity our ancestors had about the real and active presence of evil looking to trip us up, we are surrounded by dangers we cannot see, like sailing in a fog through rock-strewn waters. At least we can hold on to this much. We know that the devil stays close to Jesus. chiefly out of fear and also out of envy. The story we have this morning reminds us of that. So at least if we also stay close to Jesus, we are more likely to see the devil for who and what he is, and to have the companionship of the Lord in recognizing the tempter and in resisting whatever he sets before us. Amen.